Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. So how are you doing today? Are you fed up with too much work and incompetent bosses? Are you one of the thousands of workers who's been forced to take a cut in pay or in benefits? Or do you feel stuck in a soul-sucking job because A, you need the money, and B, you don't know what else to do? Well, it's the third Monday of the month today. Hard to believe it's come around again already. But on Conversations Live, that means we take a look at career options. And today, expert career consultant and executive coach Andrea Kay returns to talk about how to make your work for you. We'll also explore how to recession-proof your career if that's possible. Kay's nationally syndicated column appears in over 100 newspapers in the U.S. and Canada. She was named the best career counselor by Cincinnati Magazine, certainly the best career counselor that I've run into. And she's written 5 career-related books. Her new book is called Work's a Bitch, and Then You Make It Work, 6 Steps to Go from Pissed Off to Powerful. Andrea Kay, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. It's great to be with you again.
Well, it's great to have you back. Of course, we met in New York several years ago, and I was so impressed with what I heard you talk about. Had you as a guest on our old show a couple of years ago, and I was just thinking a few weeks ago, I wonder what Andrea Kay's up to these days, and it was very serendipitous. I looked on your website, and lo and behold, you're just launching a new book.
That's right. Just in the nick of time, too.
Yeah.
People really need this.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, you know, it's quite a title. How did you come up with that title, for one?
Well, I think, my last book was called Life's a Bitch, and Then You Change Careers. And people really identified with that phrase, that life's a bitch, and then you change careers. And so building on that, that phrase that really connected with people, and what was going on in the workplace, which is that people were really, really angry. And I've noticed that anger get louder and louder over the last, I would say, 5 to 8 years. And so trying to think of how to connect with people again, I thought, you know, work's a bitch now. but it's possible to figure out a way to make it work out. And people, as a result of all this anger and work feeling out of control, people were feeling ticked off about it and powerless. And so in working with people and listening to people, it dawned on me that, yes, it is difficult. There are a lot of things that we don't control, but there is something you can do about it. So hence the title.
Yeah, and that feeling of powerlessness just makes you even more PO'd, right?
Yeah, people feel as if they are totally out of control, that there is nothing they can do about the fact that they feel, though, not necessarily this is the truth, but they feel that they have no life, that they are being put upon to be connected to their work 24/7, that the fact that they are being asked to be very productive and yet things are being taken away from them, as you mentioned at the beginning, fewer benefits, but being asked to do more. And they feel, especially now, how can I not do those things, especially when I'm so worried about my job? So that has become a dynamic that, when I wrote the book, wasn't quite to where it is now, but that's exacerbated the problem as well.
Yeah, well, I've certainly seen many changes in the workforce myself over the last 10 years, and as everybody has. I wanted to just look a little at how we got here. You touch on that in the book, and it's something that's fascinated me for a long time because, you know, we used to have landowners and serfs, and then we went to factory owners and factory workers, and then everything became unionized, and then that kind of broke up. And it almost seems now with corporations and employees, that almost seems that the pendulum has swung back to Victorian days in some respects, in that, you know, we're expected to stay connected.
Right.
You know, factory workers in those days were expected to work 7 days a week. They had child labor. So how did we get to this point?
Well, the history history professors that I talked to, and in my own observations, you know, we in the 60s, and when we became the majority of workers became white collar workers, it was the mantra, what really was, is a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, and that included good fringe benefits and a decent company to work for, and that you would be getting decent pay, you would get bonuses, all of those things. So those expectations and that mantra became what people began to trust and believe that work was all about. And, you know, really the fair exchange, the concept of if I give you, the worker, I'm going to give you, company, my time, my talent, my skills, my knowledge, and my education, then you're going to provide me with all those things, that decent place to work, the salary and bonuses. But really what's happened in the last 10, 12 years is that contract seems to be having been whittled away at. The workers are being asked to be more productive and they've been asked to work longer hours, and it's because of not just this, but these are some of the factors influencing that are the global economy and technology and the need to stay competitive. So we're all, companies are struggling with, well, how do I do that? How do I stay competitive? How do we work in this global economy if we aren't more productive, if we don't have people connected 24/7? And then all of that gets exacerbated because the technology becomes addictive, and you start thinking, well, I have to be connected. Well, if I want to keep my job, and if I want to keep people happy and my customers and clients happy, I have to constantly be in touch. And so you start changing your life and your habits. And so eventually where we get to then is this feeling of I never can get disconnected. And so all of this is just sped up into this feeling of I have no life, and that employers don't care about me. They just want me to get the work done, and they want me to work harder. And so those are some of the issues. And then, of course, some of the other anger has come from some of these naughty executives that have been, doing things like illegal dealings, which, of course, we don't really, for the most part, have any control over. But that has made the situation even worse.
Yeah, I did a Google search on that yesterday, and I just put bosses and fraud, I think, in Google, and it was horrifying how many cases popped up. Of course, we had the former NASDAQ chief last week was indicted on fraud, $50 billion worth. It seems there's very little trust there, isn't there, right now?
Oh, absolutely. And it's understandable. And that's not to say there aren't good companies to work for. And it's not to say that all companies do this, because they don't. And in my book, I talk about some of those small, medium, and large companies that do have very reputable leaders. But because this whole, the news has just been filled over the last 10 years. I say in my book how I used to keep a file on these kinds of things, that companies were doing illegal dealings. And the file got so big, I finally had to throw it out because it was a fire hazard. It was getting so big. And, you know, you don't open up the paper one day without seeing more of that. So this has led to mistrust of our leaders and institutions, such as, you know, large companies, the government, many, many institutions.
Mm. So you're saying on many levels we have a right to be PO'd about things.
Absolutely.
But how do we turn that around and make it work for us? How do we, let's look at one of the major issues that you talked about, and that's, you know, we feel like we have no life because, heck, if I'm going to turn off my BlackBerry over the weekend and, you know, Susie and John are going to keep theirs on and they respond more quickly, it's like people are afraid not to be visible. Many people I work with are afraid not to be visible and available 24/7.
Yes. Okay, well, I know that many people think they have to be connected, that they will get in trouble if they aren't. But I think you need to ask yourself if this is something that you don't want, that this is something that is causing you grief, it is causing you suffering, it is affecting your health, it's affecting your relationships, then you need to look at whether you really are being asked to stay connected or it's something that you are choosing. In the book, I talk about some studies that show how people, when they go on vacation now, they are almost constantly connected, or at least a couple times a day, and they come back feeling not rested and as if they got no vacation because they made the choice to stay connected. So first of all, you have to decide and really look at whether you're being required to do it or it's your choice. Unless somebody's holding a gun to your head or the company says it's your job to do that or else, then you need to, and I think this is mostly the case, you need to look at what you're doing to stay connected even when it's not necessary or you're being told that you absolutely have to. So you get to decide what matters to you most and how you want to spend your time and how you're going to deal with it at any given moment. And so you need to make the decision and first notice, this is the thing, Vicki, that most people are not even aware of how addicted and how connected they are without even knowing it, and how they let their computer, their cell phone, or whatever electric gizmo they are constantly reacting to, and how that is running them instead of it being something that's a tool that they manage or control. So you need to notice when you're feeling pressured or you're falling for this, I just have one more call to make, you know, it won't take too long, fallacy. And it is a fallacy because there's never just one more call to make.
Right. And I think email is one of the most addictive. I mean, I got rid of my BlackBerry a couple of years ago.
Good for you. Because and how's it going? Is it working?
Yes, I'm a recovering crackberry, as they say.
But it's possible.
But it does, you know. Well, I actually lost a book deal because I was on vacation and I refused to check my email. And then when I did check it, I was like, oh no, I had 48 hours to respond on something and it had been about 72 hours. And so I picked up the phone and called New York and they're like, we're sorry, we just assumed you weren't interested. And,
oh my God.
You know, but, so I became obsessed with it, but I've tried to tame it a lot.
Well, you know what? And people always, and I have the same issue because I'm just an individual, as a sole proprietor, entrepreneur, and I don't have a big office where I can ask somebody to take over when I'm gone. But what I do is ask somebody to check. I have somebody to check my email, and I do check periodically. But I don't let it run me as many, many, many of these people I talk to do, who feel absolutely overwhelmed and that their life is a constant email or constant reaction to a client or some phone call.
Mm. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Lots of really good information in this book. And, you know, Andrea's been doing this for 20 years. So I know there's a lot in that head of yours, Andrea, that we want to pick today.
I'm glad to share it.
Well, you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest is Andrea Kay. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Are you faced with financial fear every month? Is debt running your life? Are you stressed over the Wall Street meltdown? If you're ready to create a life of financial freedom, attend a MoneyWise Women Conference, a safe place to learn about money. The all-day conference features 3 keynote speakers and 12 breakout sessions, taught by local professional experts. The next MoneyWise Women Conference is on Saturday, January 10th at North Seattle Community College. For more information, visit www.moneywisewomen.net or call 360-204-0982.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Made fresh each day for you, Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We're talking today with expert career consultant and executive coach Andrea Kay. Her new book is called Work's a Bitch and Then You Make It Work, 6 steps to go from pissed off to powerful. And we were talking about before the break about some of the reasons that people are pissed off about work and their environments. What are some other reasons, Andrea? I know you listed that, you know, people are often treated like inventory. It's a thing that I've heard. Oh, we could just be a bunch of cattle in there or a bunch of monkeys. They don't care about us.
Well, I think the way people feel they get treated like inventory comes out in a lot of different ways. It comes out in the way we've been talking about, that they are expected to, or the feeling is, again, let me emphasize the feeling, it's not necessarily the perception is, it's not necessarily the way it is, that
right.
You have to be connected 24 hours a day and that you should have no life. I think they also feel they are treated like inventory when people feel owned by the company. They're constantly monitored. Some companies have cubicle rules that limits them on their personal knickknacks and the kinds of photographs they can have on their walls. And so, you know, it takes away, again, from the personal treatment that people would like to, or respect that people would like to have. I think the job hunter feels a lot like inventory in that they don't get the respect that they feel they deserve, which is minimally just some phone call, some recognition, an email that says, thanks for contacting us, you know, we'll be back in touch, or thanks but no thanks. I had one client who told me the high point of his day was when an employer actually sent him one of those thanks but no thanks letters. Because nobody does that anymore.
Mm.
So there's just this feeling of, you know, you are here to work for us, and that feeling of being that people have, that their self-respect is being chipped away at on a daily basis and in the interview process. Some of those things contribute to that feeling of I'm being treated like inventory.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, what I believe is that no matter who you work for and where you work, you always, always, always work for yourself.
Yes, that's a good point. And you are also the one who gets to decide what kind of work you do. So many people tell me that I can't do good work. My company doesn't care about it. And so what happens, and this is where a lot of anger I notice in people exists, is that they feel like they're not doing their best work. And when they are feeling that way, they feel bad. They feel powerless. And when you're not doing your best work, you're really angry. Because I think, in general, people want to do good work. They want to feel proud about what they have done, as if they were doing it for themselves. So I tell people, look, you really, only you get to choose the quality of your work. But many people tell me, but I really don't, because if I speak up, I'm going to look bad, or I'm going to upset the apple cart, or, you know, there's this discussion going on in the room and nobody wants to hear the bad news, so I don't speak up. Well, that is an issue that that's a decision that you've made, and therefore has led you to feel powerless and bad about your work. So, yeah, if you at the end of the day feel the same way as you just said, Vicki, which is, hey, I work for myself. I owe it to myself to do good work because it will impact how I feel about my work and my life overall, then you need to make a decision that you're going to open up and share your valuable insight and advice, because unless you're working for a really bad company, that's what a good company is paying you for. Mm. And that's what makes for satisfying work.
Yeah. You talked about, you know, many companies having cube rules and putting restrictions. And I know micromanaging is a huge issue for many people. And I actually had some listener emails come in knowing the show was coming up. And unfortunately, I don't have the names with me. I think this was Sandy's. How can the average worker wanting to succeed overcome micromanagement was her question. It's a big issue.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how it is being exerted. So I'll talk about it in a general way. If, you know, micromanaging is potentially the result of an individual manager. It might be endemic in the culture, but let's say in this caller's instance, it's their particular manager that she or he feels is micromanaging them. And so that micromanagement typically comes from somebody who is feeling uncomfortable, insecure, needs to know what's always going on, needs to have total control. And so if you have a manager like that, you may need to assure him or her that you're great. You are on top of it. Find ways to let your manager know that they don't need to check in with you every hour, every day on how that project is coming, or did you call this person, did you do that? I mean, the question is, how is it showing up for you? And so you need to say, look at that and say, well, what is it that my manager might be afraid of isn't getting done, or what I'm not doing? And then look for some ways to develop some new potential structures and how you work together, some communication techniques, some ways that will help you stay or minimize that fear that your manager may have if he or she doesn't stay on top of you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we talked in the beginning about trust, and that's a two-way street. So we also have to show that we can be trusted too, right? Work on managing our manager enough so that we develop that trust with they develop trust with us.
Absolutely. And there may be some micromanaging managers who still aren't willing to allow that to evolve, that trust to evolve. But it's a place to start. And if you have a decent manager, you can sit down and have that conversation with him or her to say, you know, I noticed that you're feeling, this is you talking to your manager in an open conversation, I noticed that you tend to want to know this, this, and that, or you are asking for this, this, and that. And what I appreciate that. Tell me more about what it is you're looking for. Maybe we can come up with some ways for me to deliver that without it detracting from when I'm working on this project. Or and let them know, you know, when you're asking that from me, it takes me away from this. So can we come up with a better way? Or what is it you're looking for that I can give you to help you feel comfortable?
Yeah, perfect. And sometimes we're just literally in the wrong job or the wrong company. Mm-hmm. Today, with everything that's going on, people are more fearful about changing jobs. So how do they, what are some factors we need to consider before we decide, you know, is it time for us to move on? Is this workable for us? Is this not workable?
Well, I think the first thing you need to look at is, what is it that is not working? Many people will say, I need to change jobs or I need to change careers. And when I say, well, why, they just, you know, have this overall angst or anger about it. And so I'll ask them to describe what, you know, what is it? Is it the boss? Is it the relationship with your boss? Is it the culture of the company? Is it the work you're doing? Is it the company? So let's first define what's not working. Then step two is to say, well, is there something I might be able to do to not necessarily fix it, but manage it or work with that or change it? No, is there a way to work for somebody else within this company because you really like the company, it's just the person you work for, or you're not doing the kind of work that you enjoy? So look to see if there's a way to work with it in the present company. Now, if none of those things are going to happen for whatever reason, and this work, this company, this boss is making you physically sick, then you need to seriously consider making a move. You know, when people come to me and say they're not sleeping, it's affecting their relationships, it's affecting their health, that's a pretty good indicator that something either needs to change in any of those things I just mentioned, or you need to look at a different company.
Right. Now, what if you feel that you're in a position and not getting the recognition you deserve? Again, we go back to, you know, ultimately we work for ourselves. So how do we approach that if we feel, well, geez, I'm the one coming up with all the innovative ideas and I'm the one who's, you know, bringing in the results. How do we get the recognition we deserve if it's not acknowledged?
Well, first you need to make sure that other people, the right people, know that you are doing all those great things. A lot of people will assume that their boss notices how great they are, and usually I tell people your boss is too busy doing everything else, worrying about other things, to notice the great work you're doing or how great or above and beyond the call of duty you are going. So it's up to you to make him or her aware of that. And if you do not have the opportunity to sit down with your boss because your boss is not initiating those kinds of conversations, then you need to do it. You need to do it on a formal basis from time to time, at least two times a year, and on an informal basis by going to your boss and pointing out that you did such and such, which resulted in X, Y, and Z, and how much you did and how you enjoyed doing that, and make sure they understand the results and the impact of the work that you had. A lot of people will suffer silently. I'm not getting the recognition I deserve, but they haven't told anybody. They haven't made it really clear as to why they are deserving of that recognition based upon the results that they created or were involved in. So you need to tell people about it. You need to track it and communicate it to the people that matter.
Now, there, you know, I was at a dinner party the other night and people were talking about their jobs and, you know, I haven't had a raise in X amount of time and, you know, I really deserve a promotion and I'm not going to get that because of the economy. But there are still people out there asking for raises and getting promotions. How do you suggest that in this economic time we approach that situation if we're feeling that way?
Well, it may not be a... It may not be easy to get as easy, not that it ever was easy, but it may be more difficult to get a raise or a promotion at this point because, you know, of what's going on. But nevertheless, depending on what your company, who you work for, and the kind of work you do, people are still getting promotions and raises. And it has never changed that the reason you get a promotion or a raise is because you have proven, demonstrated that you have added value, that you've done something to increase your value that is deserving of that. So if there may be a freeze on those things. And a lot of companies, there are, and companies go through these times when they do put a freeze on promotions and raises. So it may be something that you have to revisit in 6 months to a year. But if not, and if it does seem like a reasonable time, then you need to go in with a very well thought out description of why you are deserving, because you have done the following three things in the last 6 months to a year that have resulted in this.
Mm.
Again, it's very well thought out. You've practiced it. You can pinpoint it, and you can describe the results and the impact it's had on the client or relationships or the business overall.
Right. I love your book because you talk about looking truth straight in the eye.
Yes.
You know, not we can tend to fall into this powerless victim kind of scenario, but it's so counterproductive for us. You have a section that you call, you say, greatness is looking your own discontent in the eye. I wonder if you'd talk about that a little.
Well, I think I've forgotten exactly where that is, but overall, when I think about greatness, it goes back to what I was saying before, that you, at any given moment, have the capability, the opportunity, the choice to speak your piece, to open up and share what you notice that nobody else in the room has the nerve to say. It's up to you to challenge conventional wisdom, to say what needs to be said, you know, to stick to your principles, all of those things that, you know, it's a matter of noticing what you're afraid of at that moment, you know, and saying, what is it that is stopping me at this moment from not speaking up? What am I afraid of? And is it worth it? Am I going to feel worse if I don't say something here? Mm. And that takes, it takes courage to do that. It takes being more focused on doing great work than being fearful about how you're going to look or what could happen.
Yeah, and worrying about what coworkers will say or think.
Absolutely. I had a client who was always afraid to speak up in meetings, and she was a vice president, but she was afraid to deliver bad news. And I said, well, what do you think's going to happen? Well, they might fire me, you know, worst case scenario. So I gave her some tips, and we talked about how she might bring up things in a not necessarily an attacking way, or don't you see how stupid you are that you're not saying this, but in a way that led them to see the problem and the insight that she had. So she began doing that, and it shifted. It was as if the energy in the room shifted when she did that, because they were really in deep trouble with a client. And when she made the choice to do that, everybody started looking at her differently and treating her like an incredibly valuable player on the team. And she started getting promotions, and she got the recognition, all those things that we just talked about, because she was willing to speak up and say what nobody else wanted to say.
Yeah, and I think nowadays that is so important. You know, so many people tend to fly under the radar when layoffs are being announced. You know, they think, oh, I'll just, you know, stay quiet and not get noticed and hopefully keep my job. But I think that is counterproductive. And I was reading a little about Google, who Forbes voted, or they were rated actually in Forbes as the number one company to work for. And they really look for people who will bring out those ideas. They have no formal work structure, and that doesn't suit some people. It was really interesting. No, go ahead. Yeah,
no, I was just going to say, I interviewed them for this book because of that exact attitude that you're just describing. You know, they love innovative thinkers and people that aren't into structure. And for some people, though, that may not work. And, you know, they may not feel comfortable with that loosey-goosey kind of environment and culture that they have there. But somewhere in the book, I talk about how the best employers in the world are really looking for the most creative, most innovative people, you know, in the world. And they're going to be willing to pay them top dollar because of their innovative thinking and their willingness to be more creative and, you know, to not be afraid to say what's on their mind.
Mm. And sometimes it's so much less about what experience you've had in the past. It's how you think, isn't it?
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's what it's can you bring ideas to the table?
Absolutely. I know somebody right now, he owns an advertising agency, and he's trying to find somebody who can be kind of a protege. And it's the way he's been, the way he has written up the job description isn't so much what you can do because of you have years of experience. He's looking for somebody who gets it. And by that he means who thinks the way he needs them to think, innovatively, you know, willing to, you know, not just be a order taker, but somebody who's willing to do the kinds of things that are necessary to, you know, to work for their clients. And but the emphasis, the thing that is most important for him is that that person who gets it, who thinks that way. And he can't find anybody. He's had one or two people that mm-hmm. have responded, but yeah, they just don't have that thing we're talking about, because they're trying to present themselves to fit into a mold, or worry that they don't have the right exact experience. And for many employers, that's not what they're looking for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you go along and be yourself, that's the best thing you can do, because you don't want to pretend to be something else you're not and then get this job that's a bad fit for you.
Yes, exactly.
I love this. You say, stop acting like a potted plant. Potted plants just basically sit there waiting on others to make sure they grow and thrive by checking on them, giving them water when they need it. Stop conducting your career in the same way.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So many people sit there, keep their heads down, hope that somebody will come around and check on them and say, how's it going? Here's how you're doing. Do you need anything? Okay. And when you conduct your career that way, that's not taking responsibility for it. That's the person that is caught off guard when the company comes to them and says, you know, you're really not up to speed on these skills. You're really not contributing the way we need you to. And that's because they've not taken the initiative to find out how they were doing. I talk about the former mayor of New York, Mayor Koch, who I once read that he'll be sitting in a restaurant, he would be sitting in a restaurant when he was mayor, and he'd look around and he'd go, how am I doing? And that's the kind of thinking that you need to employ in your career, is ask, how am I doing?
Right.
Am I doing the kinds of things that are keeping up with what we need to do as a company and in this industry? Have I, you know, are my skills up to speed? Is my knowledge up to par? Am I thinking about what's next, the next year and 5 years from now, and how to excel and gain more expertise? That's not up to anybody else but you.
And on that note, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk. We'll look at, see if we can recession-proof our career. We're talking today with Andrea Kay. Her new book is called Work's a Bitch, and Then You Make It Work, 6 steps to go from pissed off to powerful. You're listening to Conversations Live. Stay with us.
Of the strain as I go from bed to work and from work back to bed. And I'll see you at weekend.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Looking for new fiction authors? For a different kind of book? For good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? Then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk Podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest today is career consultant and executive coach Andrea Kay. She is one of the best consultants that I've ever run across in this area. And she's joining us today to talk about work in general. Her book is called Work's a Bitch, and Then You Make It Work. Her book is called Work's a Bitch, and Then You Make It Work. 6 steps to go from pissed off to powerful, full of really great practical advice here. I wanted to talk a little bit, Andrea, about how and if we can recession-proof our career. And I think some of the things you've already talked about should help us. But is it ourselves we're really trying to recession-proof or our jobs?
Yeah, I like how you put that. First of all, this whole recession-proof concept has got me a little nutty on my end because people, when they think they can recession-proof their career, I think what they are hoping for is that there is some silver bullet in the form of an industry or a job that's going to be immune to cuts, and they're trying to figure out, well, what do I need to do to stay safe? And if your focus is on how to stay safe, you're not going to be focusing on what you really need to be focusing on, which is how to stay valuable. And because, you know, they're really, if you're looking for refuge in an industry that's going to, you know, won't be affected by change, good luck.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't exist. So I don't think the answer is to have a death grip on the past or on a life jacket to a, you know, something with a foreseeable future. It's more about thinking more innovatively and thinking more creatively about your own career. And yeah, and it goes back to some of the things we've talked about and some really specific questions that you need to be asking yourself all the time and doing this on a monthly and a quarterly and a yearly basis. And there are questions like, what direction is my industry headed and what should I be doing to prepare for it? And if I'm not sure of what that direction is, what do I need to do to figure it out? I think you need to look at what are the social, economic, political, and environmental, and cultural, technological, all those things, all those forces that are affecting your field, and what do you need to do differently or how do you need to shift that will keep you valuable? You know, what skills need fine-tuning? What markets can you tap into with what you already do know and what you already can do? How do you change your own personal business model to meet the needs, the changing needs of your industry or going to another one? So those are some of that's the thinking that you need to be employing and practicing regularly, as opposed to saying, you know, where it used to be the question everybody asked me was, where are the hot jobs? Now it's, how do I recession-proof my career, make sure that I'm safe? And neither question is really the effective question to ask. It's really about, how do I stay valuable and enjoy what I do?
Right. And we can face resistance. I'll fess up. I had a little resistance. I jokingly say I went through a period of mourning about 2 years ago when I realized that, you know, writers are valued differently today than they were 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because it seems like anybody can write a book today. Anybody can, you know, write anything these days. People don't want to pay what they used to pay in some circumstances. And so every industry changes, and so I had to learn some new skills, and by opening the door to those new skills, I actually got to work on some really fantastic projects. But there was that initial resistance there in the beginning.
Oh, tell me about it. I hate change. I absolutely hate having to do the things that I just told you need to do and everybody needs to do. And I am constantly reminding myself that I'm just like everybody else. I mean, as a writer, I go through the same things, and I'm resistant, and I'm at first pissed off. You know, why do I have to change? You know, why does this have to be any different? It still works for me.
Right.
That is absolutely natural. And then the question becomes, so are you going to stay pissed off, or are you going to do something about it? Because if you don't, nobody else will. So, you know, that's natural, and what you need to do is recognize it and then make a decision and then set a meeting with yourself to do it anyway, even though you don't like it. Because you're the one that suffers.
Right.
Otherwise.
Right. Now, what if you don't have, in theory, the job skills, you don't have hard proof that, hey, I can do this, that, and the other, but you just know that you'd be really good at doing a particular job. It's very hard to get through the door, isn't it? Unless people see something on the resume. How do they approach that?
Well, you do need to, you have to realize that somebody is not going to hire you just because you think you can do the job, or they're not going to give you a promotion just because you think you can. When I was doing a book tour 2 years ago for the Life's a Bitch, or the Career, I get my book titles, Career Change book,
right.
That title. And I remember after I was at a TV station in Phoenix, and this woman came up to me, young woman, probably in her early 20s, and said, how do I get them to hire me to be an anchor? And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, I've been telling them for 2 years, I know I can do the job. I know I can do the job. And I said, well, you might know it, but you need to prove it. They have to feel, you have to show them that you can do the job through various skills and all kinds of things. And it's no different than when you're trying to do a job that you've never had before. You have to demonstrate that you have the knowledge, the skills, the abilities, and the attitude and the passion to do it. So it's not to say that somebody wouldn't hire you without experience, but just saying, I know I can do it, doesn't cut it. You've got to create a story, a great story that says, here's the kind of attitude or the passion or the thinking or the things that it will take to be able to do this work better than anybody else. Here are the top six strengths that I have that are transferable to do this job, and here's how it would work. Here's the knowledge that I have accrued and developed so that I can do this work, even though I've never done it. And I'll start at the bottom, or I'll start at a place where you want me to start, but I know that I can do this based on that story, that tangible story that you've thought through and you can demonstrate.
Yeah, and then that goes back to showing, being innovative and creative and showing initiative, which hiring managers always are looking for.
Absolutely. You will stand out if you can do that from 99% of the people, because 99% of the people don't do that. They write a boring resume. They don't think through their story. They don't think like an employer. They think like a job hunter who sits there and says, boy, I have a problem. My problem is I want this job, and I know I can do it. You have to think like the employer who says, why should I hire you? What are you going to do? How are you going to solve these problems? You have to think about the problem that you're there to solve and how you're going to do it and what thinking you're going to bring to the situation and the daily task that will be set before you and why you're going to be the best person to be able to do that. And with examples from the past of how you've solved similar problems.
Yeah, and they don't have to be in the same field.
No. It's all about applying skills, thinking, attitude, knowledge, all those things.
Yeah. Well, Forbes said when I was doing my research that there were 8.8 million Americans unemployed in July. In October, that had risen to 10.1 million, and I know it jumped up again. Since November 1st, there's been another 90,000 layoffs, they said, just at the largest 500 companies. Mm-hmm. You said you don't think that there is such a thing as a recession-proof career. They gave some industries like education, energy, healthcare, international business, environmental sector that they thought, you know, stood a better chance of being recession-proof. But I also know people in these industries who've been laid off too.
Right.
Yeah. So focus on ourselves. Focus on how we can become more marketable. Increase our skill set. Anything else?
Have a what I call my who knew strategy. I talk about that in one of the chapters in Prepare for Hurricanes, Sinkholes, and Manana. And basically, it's based upon the fact that you never know what could happen. And who knew that your boss, who you loved and loved you, would be transferred to another city or another state, or would leave or would die or whatever? Who knew that your company would be merged? You need to be prepared no matter what. And so I go through all the steps of my who knew strategy, which are things like know why you matter, so that if the management came in tomorrow and said, you know, a new management came in tomorrow and you had a great story to be able to say, here's why you still need me.
Right.
Here's why you should keep me over somebody else. There's all kinds of things in that strategy, too many to go into. But if you do nothing else, make sure you have your who knew strategy so that you are prepared for the unexpected, because the unexpected is the norm.
Right. And let's just, we've just got a couple of minutes before the end of the show, Andrea. I wanted to touch on some of the naked truths. You know, let's get real with ourselves and let's, you know, start off on a realistic footnote here.
Yeah.
End note, I should say. So naked truth, number one, the workplace is not a democracy. Number two, you can be pretty much fired at any time for any reason. What do you want to say about getting real?
Well, your beliefs determine what you do and ultimately get. And many people believe that they should never be, that the workplace is a democracy. And what I'm saying is it's not. Employers have the power to hire and fire you and do all kinds of things, and they can pretty much fire you for any reason as long as it's not prohibited by law, because states recognize at-will employment. So what you have to do, and I have, I think, 13 or 14 of these naked truths, like people will ignore you until they need you, and some people, you know, or business is personal, meaning that people are going to decide whether they want to hire you because of how they feel about you.
Right.
You may not like these things, and if you choose to be disillusioned and angry and fight these naked truths, then you're going to suffer, because you're going to go on believing things are unfair and they shouldn't be this way.
Right.
The option is to decide to start where things are, not where you think they should be. And by that, you need to work with, not against, these naked truths, but to think about how you think and how that thinking is getting you in trouble.
I like naked truth number 12. People rarely act the way you want them to act.
Yeah. Isn't that true, though? I mean, people are constantly saying, well, he should have returned my call, or she shouldn't talk to me that way, or my boss shouldn't micromanage me. Well, in fact, they are. So what are you going to do? You have to go first if you want something to change. And if your belief is it's not fair, then it's hard to move off of that. But if you decide to recognize, how do I look at this, and what is it I believe that's getting in the way, and what do I need to do to change that, it kind of goes back to that woman, or person rather, that asked about micromanaging. It may not be right or fair, but it is what it is. So what are you going to do to change that, influence it, that's the word. What are you going to do to influence it, to reassemble your power, and to get the result you want?
And that's what it's all about. I thank you so much for being with us today, Andrea. I know you have podcasts on your website.
Yes.
30 seconds.
Video podcast.
Okay, tell me in 20 seconds what they're about.
Well, they're about everything we've talked about in here and more. I have over 40 of them, all kinds of issues that you deal with on the job. I interview people who are clients of mine and people who have started their own businesses. Anything that you can think of and more, there is a podcast that lasts anywhere from 6 to 15 minutes to help you with your career issue.
Fabulous. And listeners can find that at AndreaK.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Vicki.
And my guest, Andrea Kay, a career consultant and executive coach, named the best career counselor by Cincinnati Magazine. And her new book is called Work's a Bitch, and Then You Make It Work, 6 Ways to Go from Pissed Off to Powerful. And you can find her at AndreaK.com. Thank you for being with us today. If you have questions or feedback on today's show, you can, of course, always reach me at info@conversationslive.net or at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. And don't forget to check out Book Talk. We have a new review up there every Wednesday just for you, and you can find that at 1150kknw.com. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next week with all new programming. Until then, live well, live strong.
Coming next week on Conversations Live, professional photographer Amy Blackburn joins Vicky to share the emotional journey she experienced with her best friend. A journey that began when her best friend asked, "Can you take a picture of me tonight, just the way I am right now?" Tune in for Caring for Cynthia next Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for more information.